Okay, yes, come have a seat. Okay, a few very interesting Rashis. I'll try to be brief because there are a few Rashis I want to talk about. If I get stuck on one Rashi, we'll... Moshe asks the Meraglin to check whether they live in closed cities or walled cities, or open cities. So he says the language is Hechazaku harafe. Are they strong or are they weak? Now that's an interesting question that would take a lot of intel, a lot of reconnaissance, but the Meraglin don't really know. I mean, when he asks them about the fruit, they can bring back some fruit. But this quick trip through Eretz Yisrael may not give them enough time to provide military strategy. It's not like they can pick up Jane's military strategy, famous magazine, and try to understand their relative strength and their air force and their infantry. And how do they know? So Rashi says that the continuation of the pasuk provides that answer. How will they determine Hechazaku harafa? Let me find the pasuk for you. Habemachanim im b'miftzarim. If they live in open camps or they live in closed walls, that will help you determine whether they're strong or weak. Now you and I would think, well, if they live in strong fortresses, then they're very, very strong and they're impenetrable because it's harder to conquer a city that's within heavy, thick walls, especially before the age of dynamite. If they live in open camps, then they're more vulnerable and easier to capture. So Rashi says, no, there's an inversion. Moshe tells Yoshua that if they live in open camps, then they're probably pretty strong. They don't have to protect themselves. They have enough confidence in their own military prowess. They don't have to fortress themselves behind walls. If you see them living in too many walled cities, that's probably a sign that they're weak. They need to rely on the walls for their defense systems. So essentially, Moshe is providing Yoshua with a coded attempt or a coded system how to determine the military strength of the inhabitants. Hechazaku harafa, if you want to determine whether they're strong or weak, then look at the machanim in b'miftzarim. Do they live in machanot, in open camps, or do they live in miftzarim, in fortresses? Now this is an interesting metaphor for not just for military strength, but for emotional and psychological strength. If you are someone that's very confident in yourself, in your own identity, then essentially you're an open person. You understand other people, you want to learn from them, you want to correct your own experiences. You live in an open interface with other people. Very often people that are underconfident, that are very weak and insecure, they tend to basically insulate themselves against other people. They don't really have identity. They tend to be very negating of other people. They tend to be very unaccepting of other people. And they have to live within their own fortress of their own values, because those values oftentimes aren't strongly enough entrenched to open yourself to hear what other people. So, for example, I feel very often that a lot of people who respond negatively to Haredim, which I think sometimes borders on Haredi phobia, where all Haredim are cheaters and liars and cheat on their taxes. And I remember a Rebbe of mine once told me that he was building a shul somewhere, and one of the neighbors was upset that the shul would take some parking spaces. Whatever, it was all legal, but the neighbor was legitimately upset. But the neighbor came over to the Rebbe, to my Rebbe, and said, if you don't pull back this construction project, I'm going to tell the IRS, the tax authority, on you. I said, go ahead. And I should just assume that if he was a Haredi person, then he wasn't paying his taxes, and that if you called the IRS, the Internal Revenue Service, which is the tax collecting agency, that he'd be incarcerated, or at least fine, I pay him. So just this assumption that a Haredi person wasn't paying taxes with it was like so obviously stereotypical and incorrect. So at this stage in your life, you tend to be less secure in your identity because you're building your identity. You know who you are. You're trying to find who you are. And sometimes that comes out in very negative statements about other people on an interpersonal level, an ideological level. And the reverse is also true. If you want to find people in life that are very confident in themselves, try to look to see if they're open-minded and accepting and understand the complexity of life, and they don't have to render judgments about people. So this question of whether you have a walled city or an open city is a metaphor not just for military strength, but a metaphor for personal experience. And try to train yourself not to negate. And when you find yourself negating people, when you find yourself not accepting people, ask yourself, is it because I disagree with them, or is it because I still feel vulnerable? And the easiest way for me to presumably reinforce my own identity is to build a wall around myself and not let anything in. That's an interesting Rashi in the beginning of the Parsha. Now, there's a Rashi in the end of the Parsha, which I think is central to a very important question in Parsha Shlach. So let's first read the Rashi, then I'll tell you what I think Rashi is trying to get at. Moshe is informing, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is informing the Jewish people in Pasuk Chavtes Perek Yudalet, everyone above 20 will die, and the next generation will be replaced over 40 years. Keep in mind, there are two reasons that they spend 40 years in the desert. One is Mida Keneged Mida for the 40 days. One is because Hashem doesn't want anyone to die before they're 60. But on the other hand, Hashem wants everyone above 20 to pass. So at some level, you have to wait 40 years. Hashem doesn't want to kill everyone immediately. So the 40 years are both necessary for Mida Keneged Mida, as well as to allow a generation replacement. On the one hand, on the other hand, not to let people die too early. It's an important lesson. I'm not going to get to Rashi yet. Important lesson that even though this was a doomed generation, many of them still lived 40 years. Many of them still raised families. Many of them still had children. Many of them learned Torah. Many of them were productive. So that even though sometimes the larger picture presents conditions of failure, they're not going to enter Eretz Yisrael. They're not going to be God's generation. They still lived productive lives. They still contributed. In fact, the Gemara says that on Shabbos we have to determine what a kesher shel kayama is, to be over the melach of kshira. So the Gemara learns it out. One day I learns it out from the ksharim they made in the midbar when they moved from camp to camp. That was pointless movement. That was pointless journeys. Is that a kesher shel kayama? Not an eternal kesher that serves some larger purpose? The answer is yes. Even though on the larger historical stage their lives are futile because they're just going to die, but every minute of life is worthwhile, and every minute of productivity. And even though you can't change history, you can still live a worthwhile and worthy life. And that's why Hashem says, I'm going to wait 40 years, because some of you still have a lot of life to live, and a lot of productivity, and a lot of decisions to make, and ways to contribute. Very important statement, as we tend to look at the Meraglim as just a story of doom and gloom and condemning people to death, but it really wasn't that. Anyway, when Hashem first informs them, he says, Bamidbar hazeh, Yiplu figrechem, v'chol pekudechem l'chol misparchem mi'ben esim shena v'mala. Very interesting way of informing them that anyone 20 years or older, will die. Yiplu figrechem, and the end of the pasuk is mi'ben esim shena v'mala. But it's not, how does Hashem telegraph the 20-year-olds? Chol pekudechem l'chol misparchem. All those who are counted. Okay. That's how you describe people that are 20 years old need to qualify, they happen to be counted. Just say they're 20 years old. It doesn't need a qualification. Why is Hashem invoking the fact that all the 20-year-olds were counted? So Rashi explains all the censuses that had been conducted in the beginning of Parshas Bamidbar. The many censuses. Censuses for encampments, censuses for carrying the Mishkan. They're not necessarily B'nai Levi because they were excluded from the Chet HaMaragim. They didn't send the Nasi. They were excluded from the Chet HaEgel. All the various censuses to determine where to camp, how to go to war, how to travel. Rashi, l'chol mispar shetem nimnim bo. All the 20-year-olds who were incorporated in various counting schemes. Could go latzei tzvavo latzava, to go to war. Latzei shkalim, to give shkalim to the Beis HaMikdash. Kol ha-menuyim, l'chol osam misparos. All the people that were counted in those various censuses, again, being 20 years old, or else you wouldn't be counted. Yamusa. Why is Hashem inserting this? So I think part of the issue is as follows. Big question is, what made the Chet HaMeraglim so much more severe than the Chet HaEgel? Why were they punished so severely? And for the Chet HaEgel, Hashem more or less waives it after Moshe's tefillah. Very important question, because one seems to be rejecting Hashem entirely, the Chet HaEgel, or at least entering the world of paganism, which is theological mayhem. And one is just fear about Eretz Yisrael. It wasn't a religious breakdown, or a complete religious breakdown. So part of the answer is it was the second time. And after going through that catharsis, you'd expect them to be a little bit more obedient. But part of it is that a year later was not just a year later. But the Egel has to be seen in context of Yetzias Mitzrayim. They're a band of slaves. They're still very uncertain about life. They're being directed by the Erev Rav, according to Rashi and the Egel, so they still have all these Egyptian associates that are smuddying the waters. Now it's not just a year and change later, it's Tisha B'Av, a year and a half after leaving Mitzrayim, but now they've been primed to enter Eretz Yisrael, and they've seen so much, and they've seen Har Sinai, and they've been given this mission to enter Eretz Yisrael, to fight battles, to enter the kingdom of Hashem into this world. When you've been given such opportunities and such exposure, more is expected of you. It's not just 6 months later, a year and 6 months later. But these were people who were counted, and the counting was metaphorically and actually the handing of mission. You are now going to enter this land, reshape history, carry a Mishkan, you're no longer slaves, and you're not just ordinary people. You've been empowered with a sense of potential. And at the very least, that sense of potential should have deterred this breakdown. And still you failed. And that's what makes this chet more severe. Because it's a betrayal of opportunities that you've been empowered to. It's a very important concept. Rav Lichtenstein talked about it a lot and conveyed it a lot. Which generation do you live in? What have you been given? How were you raised? And what are your responsibilities to Am Yisrael, to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? And you can't necessarily compare yourself to survivors of the Holocaust who barely escaped and had to rebuild their lives and had their own acts of heroism. But you're in a particular historical slant or slot, and you have responsibilities, and those responsibilities should have deterred or should have steadied you. Hashem is saying, you were pikudechem l'chol misparchem. You were part of these countings which weren't just practical to know how many Jews there were, but to create army formations with a sense of entering Eretz Yisrael and creating Makom HaShechina, to create encampments, to carry the Mishkan, and you compromise all of that. Because of that, then the punishment is going to be much, much more severe. It's the chol pekudechem, the chol misparchem. I told myself I want to go past the 10-minute mark, so I'll have to wait for the other Rashis for next time. So two Rashis. Number one, sometimes when you're open-minded, you live in open settings, it shows that you're stronger, identify, you have a stronger sense of whom you are, you don't feel the need to fortress yourself, to insulate yourself. Number two is the reason the countings were mentioned. Well, we need to know who's 20 years old. We just know who's 20 years old. We don't need a qualifier. The answer is that that's the reason that the punishment is so extreme, because you really squandered opportunities that you had been given, the potentials that was conveyed to you by being counted amongst Hashem's camp. Okay? Have a good Shabbos, everyone.
Thank you.